Today, I have a fantastic guest here on The Pulse. I have Kelly Miller with me. She is a relationship coach. She is a book author, and she is definitely very, very prolific when it comes to radio shows and TV shows. She's been coaching couples all about love and relationships for decades. And her latest book called Love Hacks is what we are going to look at today. If you're in a relationship or if you're not in a relationship, if you're married or not, if you're in love or not, or you want to be in love or you fell out of love and you kind of think, okay, I'm in a relationship or I'm married, how do I rekindle my relationship? Love Hacks is the book you want to read. The 15 most common problems in relationships, and each problem is not only being described and analyzed, but you have three strategies with that that you could try out in order to remedy whatever the issue is in your relationship. I think it's a great book. Before, you know, going to a relationship coach for, I don't know, months or even years worth of coaching, even though this is positive, if you want a hack, because we are living in a real fast society. You have a problem, you need a solution, you need the solution now. In any case, I hope you're going to enjoy this conversation with Kelly Miller. I hope you're going to give us a like, and I also hope if you haven't done so, that you're going to subscribe to On The Pulse. See you right now with Kelly Miller. Well, I promised you Kelly Miller. Here she is with us on The Pulse. She is a relationship coach. She is an author. She is definitely a lot on the radio and on TV. And she just came out with her latest book called Love Hacks, Simple Solutions to Your Most Common Relationship Problems. Kelly, good to have you.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Let's dive straight into, I mean, relationships. We all have relationships. If you're in a relationship or not, doesn't really matter. And there is so much in terms of, it's wonderful to be in any kind of relationship, friendship or not, but it always is something that needs kind of a management. And I think your book was so wonderful. It's talking about relationships, of course. So married couples, couples in general, long-term relationships. And there are about 15 common problems we all may face in our relationships. And what I loved about your approach was, you know, we live in a very fast-paced time. And you need quick solutions. So you have 15 problems. Each one has their solutions as far as you are concerned if you want a quick fix. But before we get into those individual relationship issues, Kelly, tell me about you. How Sure. come that you're so interested and now so knowledgeable about relationship? What made you so interested about looking into the science of love relationships, sexual relationship, and the entire issue?
There's nothing more fascinating than relationships. That human connection, our relationships, not only with our romantic partners, but with our siblings, with our parents, they're all different dynamics. So it really, really fascinates me. And then, yeah, I think it's this idea that we need to work at relationships. We really do. And so to me, that fascination of like, okay, how can we make it easy for people to work on the relationship? So that's really what spawned the book for me. And I had couples coming into my office asking the same concerns repeatedly. We struggle with money. There's a lack of sex drive, things like that, that just constantly kept coming up. And I was like, you know, I need to create something to help those couples outside my office as well.
And what I think is really something to pick up on what you just said, you know, relationships, we cannot do without relationships, and we are not living in a bubble by ourselves. So wherever we turn, there will be a person, if we necessary, you know, if it's a cashier somewhere in the supermarket or not, this is already where relationships start. And I wonder to what extent really it is something you can, you know, proactively manage, if you think about it, or you are victim to, and you just kind of somehow find yourself in conflicts and just try to resolve them or not?
It's a great question. I mean, I think it's like anything else, right? Our actions convey our priorities. If it's important to you to have a strong relationship with whomever, think you have to make it work. You have to put in that effort. And so I think that's a little bit what happens over time with couples. It's like, yeah, they take it for granted and they'll always be there. And so there tends to be a little bit of that laziness. So I think we need to put in that effort with all of our relationships. And, you know, it is important, like you said, because that's what we have. So we have to make it work.
We have to make it work. Laziness. I like that. Let me pick up on this one as well. No, because I think it's really interesting. Let's talk a little bit, first of all, about the trajectory of, you know, meeting somebody,
sure.
Falling in love, building a relationship, right?
And
then all of a sudden, you know, somehow after a year or two, sometimes earlier, sometimes later, things start to change, shift, move, maybe to the better, often not necessary. Take us a little bit through a typical evolution you could see also with the couples you work with, where they kind of came from and then how they ended up with you.
Yeah, sure. So that beginning part, it's the best part. We're on drugs, literal hormones. So that's why it feels so good. And you want to be around this person, oxytocin, that bonding hormone, all of that. So it feels really good. And I think what happens is a lot of times couples compare that feeling toward the kind of middle relationship piece of it, where it's like, wait, I'm not feeling that same feeling. So the first thing I want to say is, you can't sustain that feeling. It's going to be there in the beginning for a reason, but that's okay that over time it's going to diminish. It's just not sustainable. So that's the first piece. So try not to compare that high that you had in the beginning to where your relationship is. But so that's the beginning part where, you know, your partner is perfect. They can do no wrong. They're wonderful. You may idealize your partner a little bit. And then obviously over time, you get to know somebody, you see their quirks, we'll call them quirks, challenges. And then it's really getting used to that. And okay, how can I kind of manage? And again, those hormones are kind of settling down. So the reality sets in. And then that's where the kind of the work comes in. It's like, oh, this is a little bit harder than I thought. Or, okay, we're kind of bumping up against things here. And so that's when I typically see the couples of like, whoa, this is a little bit harder. Like, what happened in the beginning when courtship was so fun and now we're fighting over chores and he throws his dirty socks on the floor, you know, things like that. But then obviously there's deeper things or maybe infidelity or other things that happen. But relationships ebb and flow. And that's something I talk about in the book too, where, you know, you may feel really close with your partner at times and then you may not. And that's totally normal. That's what happens in these relationships, but that's typically kind of the flow of what I see.
Yeah. Right at the beginning, your first chapter, you actually look at communication and the art of listening. And I think this may be one of the most important things we may miss, especially during the falling in love, because we sometimes perhaps try to project what we want to see in the other person because the chemistry is keeping us, looking at them in a rosy way, be it, you know, the dopamine, oxytocin, as you were saying. So I wonder, is that already the falling in love process, the being literally high on your own hormones, the first crack in what is to come? Because yes, we're listening, but we are hearing what we want to hear.
Right.
Right.
I think you're right. I mean, absolutely. And then again, that idealization, like we're just so happy that the person looks so perfect. But I think you're right. We might create a little bit of what we want in there. And that's why that is so hard. Cause it's like, once that reality sets in of like, oh wait, hold on, this person isn't so perfect. And that's hard, but we have to remember we're not perfect either. So that's the other piece of it, right? It's like, wait, we can focus so much on how our partner falls short. It's like, okay, well, you know, let's look at our part too. I always have to remind partners who come into my office, they're kind of pointing fingers. If this person would only do this, and I say, well, what about you? What can you do? And it's like, whoa, I don't want to look at I can tell you about my partner and their flaws. So it's really important that we do our own self-reflection. Okay, why is this triggering me? Or what can I do to help this relationship?
And is it often about oneself?
Yes. Yes. They literally come in and it's like, I mean, it is pointing fingers because it's really easy to look at somebody else's. It's so hard to look at our own flaws. So yeah, that happens quite often.
But I think this is really interesting because what I learned about pointing fingers, you point one finger at the person and three fingers point at you. Right.
Exactly.
I don't know whether you've heard that. But
Yes, I love
I
that.
love that. And I wonder whether, what is it about us and you as a, psychologist in general, what is it about us that we prefer to point fingers rather than to go inside and reflect, especially when we find ourselves in a situation that is important to us? I mean, we are in a relationship. We are investing time, emotion, even money, make
Right.
changes in our, professional life, in our social environment as well for that person. So it is important.
Yes.
What is it keeping us from saying, hey, I did all of this, so what
Right.
am I still doing wrong that this is not working out? What is keeping us from that rather than then pointing fingers, you think?
Sure. I think it's the shame and the embarrassment of like I'm flawed, and that's really hard to admit and hard to look at. And again, it's so much easier to point out somebody else's rather than to look inward and say, you know, I have to work on my anger. I get angry really easily and I have a temper. Or, wow, I'm triggered about this because of my own childhood. So that's why it's the shame, it's the embarrassment. It's if I admit that, I think it's this idea, if I admit this, then you're gonna look differently at me, or you're gonna realize I'm not perfect. And it's the opposite. That vulnerability is what connects people. So once we go there, we're accountable, we get vulnerable, we feel more connected to our partner. So it's counterintuitive, but I really want to stress that the more we open up, then our partners feel safer with us, and then they're more likely to open up.
No, absolutely. I mean, this is something that I even do in my professional life. It's the mea culpa culture, meaning that if I did wrong, I'm like the first one, hey, my mistake, my
Yes.
bad. I dropped the ball. Sorry, I'm gonna sort out. Accountable, you move forward. And I think there's nothing worse, than having a spot in the middle of your forehead instead of going like, I have a spot in the middle of my forehead. Sorry,
Right.
guys, I'm not the prettiest, to kind of cover it up and everybody sees it.
Yes.
Right?
Completely. Yes. Well, and I think in our culture, we're sort of taught like, okay, you know, let's not talk about it. Let's just move on. And, you know, in other cultures, they're really big about that, about being accountable and everything like that. So, I mean, you're European. So it's just different, I think, in America too.
Now, you mentioned here three fantastic tools when it comes to learning to communicate. And I think communication, as far as I've learned a little bit about it, is the encoding and decoding that sometimes just goes really badly. So red to me might be crimson, red to you might be a Ferrari red, for example. Okay,
Yes.
speaking about red, and I think to understand really when you say red, what red do you have in mind? Not me, is what gets us maybe a step closer. So you speak about three hacks: the fast food communication. What I love, the I statement, which I think is super elegant, super manipulative, but in a good way, right?
Right.
Right. And
I like
also the feedback and sounding board, if you want to elaborate a little bit on those.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So you're absolutely right. There's so much miscommunication between couples. We're wired differently. Our brains just work differently. So we're not going to think the same way as our partner. And that's a great thing, right? We can come in with different perspectives. But yes, so these three tools I think are very helpful. The first one, the fast food communication technique. If you think about when you go to a drive-through, you go to McDonald's and you order at the drive-through, they repeat back what you ordered. So they will say to you, oh, you know, you got a McFlurry, a large fry, and a hamburger. And that gives you the opportunity to correct the employee if that was right or wrong. And I want couples to do that same thing, where if they speak to their partner about something serious, I want their partner to come back and say a very simple phrase. What I'm hearing you say is. So they are repeating back what their partner said. And not only does it ensure communication, but it gives that partner the feeling of validation. Oh, they heard me. Oh, they're listening to me. And it also allows for that instant pause where it's very easy for us to get defensive and want to respond really quickly. Like if somebody says to us, I'm really upset that you came home late, our response is going to be like, well, no. You know, my boss, she kept me there. And if you're repeating back and you're saying to your partner, what I'm hearing you say is you're upset that I'm late, it allows us to just sort of settle for a second. Our partner feels heard. There's not that instant defensiveness. It's just sort of like, okay, we can take a beat. So I think it does two things. I statements are really wonderful in the sense that it's very easy for us to blame, like what we were talking about earlier with the pointing fingers. You did this and you're always late. And when we hear you, instantly, we get defensive naturally. So if we come at it where we say, I feel really upset that you come home late. There's an immediate softening. It's just such a nicer way. And again, this doesn't even have to be with our romantic partners. We can use this, the I statements with our parents, with siblings, with our kids. It's just a much softer way. And again, it's really nice modeling for the other person to hear, because then they'll eventually do that same way with you. And so it's just a much easier way. And then the final one was the sounding board versus feedback. And I think that people tend to just communicate differently. And a lot of times, and typically, not to be stereotypical, but men want to give solutions because they're solution oriented. They're more logical. And so a lot of times you hear women like, he's just, you know, he tells me what to do and he's not listening to me. And so what I say to partners is ask your partner, you know, say, you know, could I just have you listen today? Can I just, you know, and it might be hard for the other person, but it's a really great way for that person to know, oh, they just want me to listen right now. They just want me to be a sounding board. Or alternatively, if you do want your partner to give suggestions and feedback, you can say, I'd love for your feedback. So you have those two options. And if that's, you know, a little bit hard for you, maybe we say to our partner, hey, can you ask me beforehand? Hey, do you want me to be a sounding board today, or do you want feedback? So we can work it both ways. But that's a really, those three hacks are really great in helping with some of that communication frustration.
Yeah, Kelly, and I think they're absolutely fundamental. And in a way, it is really at the beginning of a relationship, whatever relationship it is, to build some sort of communication culture. Because, you know, if that comes up just like that, it feels very artificial. Yeah, yes. Because it is not natural. You really have to kind of keep the ego in, the gut reaction that is more defensive, the kind of, oh, you're late again, you know, because you actually feel like it. And you might have been ruminating with, oh, my God, he's late or she's late, da-da-da-da-da. And you get yourself a little bit warped. And then as soon as the other person comes, you start to unleash. And that is, of course, very, very damaging to the relationship. So establishing a certain communication rules or culture right at the beginning, saying, hey, listen, when I come home, I sometimes, like, I learned it with my husband. I said, hey, listen, can I just vent? I really need to vent. Okay. And he's my hero. He's very much, okay, I'm going to help you. I'm going to sort this out, because yes, he's a guy and I love that. But sometimes you just need to vent.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And to just announce that, to say, and the, you know, the approach to I this, I feel this, I see this, to me, it feels like when you do that, it's just that little buffer, that softening, that really kind of is a landing strip for something rather than something that just ignites a bomb. And it is hugely helpful. But I think that this is something that the couple needs to communicate. Let's establish some rules when we have issues.
Sure.
Alone.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right.
Well, and I love that you said that, because I think a lot of times people think that, oh, our relationships should just naturally be great. And a lot of times we have to look at it almost like a business partnership. And that sounds so unromantic, but we need to establish a lot of that structure and those boundaries, and let's talk about it and let's be proactive and all of that. And that just helps prevent exactly what you're talking about. So I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, because you mentioned romance or it not being romantic. I think, and we'll talk about it later on, about being still erotic after years with each other. And I don't know whether women are different to men. Yes, they are. Mars and Venus. And I had Dr. John Gray on the show a couple of times. We are different. We see things different. We perceive things differently. Yeah. But one thing for sure, if, for example, I am not at peace because I've had an argument which didn't go anywhere, nothing else flows, literally. So,
right.
You know, my romance is gone. So having something artificially maybe imposed in our communication makes us feel good, makes us feel connected, makes us feel go to bed together. So I think the art needs to be looked at from A to Z.
No, but you're so right. I mean, nothing kills your libido more than resentment and anger. So if we can feel that connection emotionally, that translates to the physical. So you're spot on.
A couple of things I wanted to pick up on there, and that is the timeout. Something that I used with my daughter very early on, counting her down and doing a timeout. Not necessarily you think about when you are really arguing or starting to discuss something a little bit more deeply with your partner.
Correct. Yeah. So I think people think of timeouts as punitive, right? They did something wrong. And I want to reframe that. It's not a punishment. It's just a recentering. And the truth is we all get heated. We all get overwhelmed. We all get triggered. So I really want to teach couples that's okay. That's normal. That's healthy. But let's take care of that and let's recenter ourselves. And so at any point, if you notice that you are getting heated, angry, triggered, at that point, I want you to say to your partner, hey, let's take a timeout. And so this is something that's going to be super helpful in those moments. And you want to establish the rules of the timeout before you're arguing. So this would be on neutral ground when you both are good. And we talk about, hey, sometimes we both get heated. Let's talk about timeouts, how long we want to take them for. I usually say a few hours. And during those timeouts, do whatever it takes for you to be recentered, whether that's taking a walk, listening to music, doing yoga, whatever it is for you to just sort of settle down. And then whoever calls the timeout is then in charge of reconvening. So whoever says, hey, it's, you know, I'd like to take a timeout, then okay, hey, let's reconvene and come back to it. Because both people are going to be more receptive if everyone is calmer. So it's a win-win all around. It is hard because in those moments, you want to get that last word in. I mean, for sure. And some people might feel abandoned like during timeouts, but it's not about that. It's really, hey, let's figure out the best way where we both can hear each other. And that means taking a little break and coming back to it. So I'd love for couples to get more into those timeouts because nothing good, no conflict is resolved when people are screaming at each other, right? It's much better when we're calm and relaxed.
How do we get ourselves to trigger ourselves to go like, okay, I'm starting to feel like really angry. And how do we actually manage ourselves to, first of all, count ourselves down ourselves in order to then be able to say, time out, what do you think?
You're right. This is a great question. It starts with the physical. So I want people to tune in. It's different for everybody. Some people, their heart races when they're getting angry. Some people get red and hot. Other people, they clench their hands or their jaw. So it's really tuning into those physical symptoms first. Headaches, some people get knots in their stomach. And so once you notice that, and again, this is going to be like some of that somatic work, we're going to have to really check in with ourselves and tune into the mind and body. It's going to take some time, but really that's super important. And then once we notice that, I always say, if you're going to do like a scale of 1 to 10, where 10, you are like the Hulk and like so angry, and 1, you're Zen Buddha, I want you to be about a 6. And some people are like, God, that seems so early. And I say, well, I'd rather you do it a little bit earlier, because once that anger escalates, it can quickly go to a 10. So tune in around a 6. If you start to notice, hey, I'm at about a 6, that's where I want you to say, I'd love to take a timeout. But yeah, it's going to take work on the part, but it's helpful overall. Because again, this is for romantic relationships, but we all get heated with our employees, with our bosses, with our children. So this is a really good skill to learn anyway, in general.
Yeah, I think dissociation from oneself and kind of observing oneself a little bit and learning that as a, you know, as a self-caring tool where you go like, what are you doing there? You know,
yes.
Is that good? Is that you? And, you know, talking from my own experiences, I had relationships where I thought, Jesus, that's not me. Reacting like this is just not my nature. This is undignified. That's not the Patricia I am or I like. And how come I am behaving in this way? This can't be good. So, you know, out of the situation, it wasn't a deliberate, I have to dissociate myself now because I know so much about handling my own anger or relationship or conflict. It was really like, whoa, where did that come from? Where I kind of, you know, didn't resonate with myself anymore. That was one thing. And then within the conflict, there you have assume positive intentions. Now, elaborate a little bit on that.
Yeah. So what happens is, right, over time in our long-term relationships, we can create narratives about our partners, or, you know, our frustrations start to build. And so what typically happens is we get resentful or frustrated. Oh, gosh, you know, my partner's doing this again. And it's almost like this feeling of like, God, they're doing this to annoy me, or why do they always do this? We get frustrated. And what we forget is to assume positive intentions about our partners. Our partners, they want the best for us. They love us. They wouldn't be with us otherwise, right? So we have to remember that piece of like, oh, okay, I'm going to assume that, you know what, my partner's not doing this on purpose. They're not. You know, they probably got caught up. And so it's giving a little bit of that grace, which we deserve too, right? And we'd want that same thing back from our partner. So, and sometimes, you know, it's hard to do that, to assume positive intentions with our partner. So if that's too hard, I say, okay, then just assume neutral, right? It's not negative. They're not trying to hurt us or bother us. I'm just going to be neutral around this. And that helps relieve some of that as well. And yeah, again, it's kind of like that reframing we're talking about.
You know, giving the benefit of the doubt, I think, is a great tool and it's needed. I just wonder that whether it's exhaustive, whether, you know, if you read Robert Greene, for example, he says, hey, if your partner does something nasty and then they apologize for it, but they're going to do it again and again and again. So where do you draw the line between, hey, you always have to think they're coming from a
Good place,
you know, and where is their narcissism? Where is there an abuse that's filtering?
This is a great point you bring up. So I think it's like, if it's the small things that you're frustrated about, right? They're late. They haven't cleaned up. Those kind of things, let's give the benefit of the doubt. If your partner's nasty to you and saying things, I think that's a totally different category. So I'm glad that you specified. And to me, one of my favorite expressions is, if it's hysterical, it's historical. So if you or your partner, like something feels very intense and strong and they're frustrated or you're frustrated, it's usually about something in childhood. So if you're triggered by something your partner did and it's like, gosh, you know, why is this bothering me so much? I always ask my couples, like, who does it remind you of? Which parent? You know, and it's usually like, oh, my dad used to do this thing, or, you know, that type of thing. So it's kind of tuning into that, which I think is helpful, not only for yourself of recognizing, okay, that's why I'm triggered. Okay, I've got to work through some childhood stuff. Or having a little compassion for your partner of like, okay, they've got some childhood stuff that they need to work through. And I can recognize this isn't so much about me. I think that can help.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I wonder, what do you actually then suggest when you have a couple where you actually see, hey, they actually don't have problems with each other. They have problems with themselves. They're of course bringing to their reality. What is the trajectory then of the actual therapy? Because it is not just those two. It's always a family thing, right?
Sure. We talk about it. So for that example, I would say, who does that remind you of? And the partner would say, oh, my dad used to do this. You know, he'd always nickel and dime me, or, you know, something like that. And we go through it and we talk about it. And then even that awareness helps them recognize, oh, okay, I can separate. This isn't so much about my partner. This is more of my own stuff, or I need to work through it. Or at that point, I may recommend it might be helpful for that person to get individual therapy to kind of work through some of that. So that helps. But yeah, our childhood stuff. I mean, I love the expression, if it's not one thing, it's a mother, because there's so much stuff that happens in our childhood that then is translated into our relationships unconsciously. We don't realize this. So a lot of times we have issues that happen in childhood and we almost unconsciously seek a partner to sort of resolve that for us. And then we're frustrated when they don't. And so this is all unconscious and we don't realize. So it's really, again, going to be that reflective process that's going to help us for sure in our relationships.
Yeah. And I love that you bring that up, because, you know, you always wonder about what is reality. And I mentioned about red. And I think there is just one reality, which is the fact. But for example, in hypnotherapy, you say that the map is not the territory. So whilst you know what there is outside, the way you perceive it, the way you choose to, the path you're getting somewhere is totally your own reality. So Kelly's reality and Patricia's reality, talking about the same fact or the same reality, is two different worlds. And we all know it. You know, we've been to the party, same party, two people, two different narratives. And this is something that we tend to forget, because I guess we are in love. Of course he understands me. Of course he sees the same thing.
Right.
And then when you realize it's actually not that way, that is the rude awakening, but it will never change unless you are aware of the other person's world and the way they see their world, right?
I think you are exactly right. And in Love Hacks, I actually detail a story when I think you might have read this part, but I think I was in, like, you know, fourth grade or something, and the teacher had us, she was describing a scene, and she said, okay, we're all going to take out our colored pencils, 30 people in the class, and I want you each to draw what I'm describing. And after she described this scene and different colors and things, we all held up our pictures and they were all different. So it's exactly what you said. So we're all going to look at things differently, have different perceptions. Because to me, when she described something, it was so clear. This is what it looks like, right? And then I look over at my neighbor's paper and I'm like, wait, how did you see that? And so, right, it's this idea that we are going to perceive things differently. And there's no right or wrong. I think that's the other thing. We can get so indignant. It's like, no, my point is right. It's like, no, there's got to be some flexibility that we're going to view things differently. And that's okay. It's being open to our partner's point of view and vice versa.
Yeah. And I think that maybe is what love actually stands on, is that empathy to say, hey, you see things differently and I try to see you. I try to hear you. And that was within the first couple of sentences you mentioned here in this conversation, is trying to be seen, heard, you know, and somebody listens to you and reflects it back to you, actually get, hey, he actually got me. He actually listened, didn't just hear the words. And, sure. You know, in the next chapter, you actually talking about making time for each other to be present, to be in the now, as Eckhart Tolle loves to say, yeah?
Yes.
And to prioritize. Mm-hmm. You talk there about date nights, for example. Now, again, that is something that is wonderful and you do naturally at the beginning, uh-huh. Like 10 years into your relationship. Why is that then more a discipline that turns out fun?
Sure.
But why do you need to filter it in? Where do you see the actual benefit there?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think because what happens is we suddenly don't prioritize our relationship anymore. The other things become more important, our kids, our jobs. Again, we take our partner for granted. So we have to bring back that priority, because the relationship is the foundation of the family, right? For kids, for everything. And so if you don't have that, then everything else can kind of crumble. And so it is really important to bring that back, because you two will feel more energized. You'll feel more closer connected, and it's fun and it's exciting. And we forget, oh yeah, this is fun. I forgot about this. And so one thing I recommend too is adrenaline fun activities. So if you can do that, that is instant connection, rock climbing, going to a theme park, a roller coaster. But even if it's not, that's not your thing, even something new is going to bring back some of that passion and newness. So try something different. Do woodworking class. There's axe throwing. There's, you know, making your own pizzas, just something a little bit different, because it's fun to experience that newness again with your partner, especially after you've been together for a long time. We need to bring back some of that fun and lightness, because everything can be really serious too. So that brings it back to that lightness, which is great.
Yeah. And I think that it's the emotion at the end of the day, because in a way, and I'm sure you've seen that with your clients as well, you know, routine is good. Everyday life kind of takes over, distractions, and you're starting to, you know, mill.
Yes.
And then, you know, weeks go past and you go like, that was parallel living. And you kind of, you function, but you are not, you're not together.
You're not like a unit. Exactly. Yes. No, that's one thing I talk about with my couples all the time, is we forget we're a unit, right? No one's going to win first place at being the best individual in the couple. I want you to win first place as a couple, as a unit. And so it's that reminder, oh yeah, we're in this together. How can we do this together? And it's, you know, we forget that. We're a very individualistic society anyway. So I think we have to remember that piece.
Yeah.
It'll help. A lot of times we don't have time to make big connections with our partner. And so one thing I wanted to create was this quick partner connection, and I called it TEAS, and it stands for, T is for traditions. What can we do with our partner that's just for us? Even if it's a simple goodbye kiss in the morning, goodnight kiss at night, or telling each other the five things we're grateful for, whatever it is that you want for your tradition. And that's just something quick you can do. E is for efforts. So what can I do for my partner today that's going to mean a lot to them that may not take a lot of effort? Okay, so maybe I could just give them a coffee in the morning. They'll really appreciate that. A is for acknowledgments. How can I tell my partner that I appreciate them? Could be verbal. You mean a lot to me. It could be a handwritten note. You know, have a wonderful day at work. I'll be thinking about you, you know, whatever it is, but just something to acknowledge your partner. S is for silly. We were talking about that lightness that needs to come back. And so how can I be silly in this and remember Relationships are fun. Okay, can I talk in a foreign accent? I can't do a Switzerland accent, but
I love
that's a
it.
little tough. But you know, something fun, or like, can we put on like a pig nose and like surprise our partner? Like, let's bring back some of that childhood fun. And then E is for erotic. Can I send my partner a steamy text first thing in the morning, and kind of, you know, shake things up a little bit? Or if that's a little too much for you, maybe it's just a sensual poem or quote that you can do. And so those things in T's, I think, are just an easy way to feel connected to your partner that don't take a lot of work.
What hit most home with me in these five T's acronym parts is definitely the silliness. For me, I think, being in finance, private equity, and this is my day-to-day. So, and I'm running a company together with my husband. So we are very much all the time, very much focused on our job. And that lightness, that laughter, just to be silly and put on the pig's nose, as you said, is so important because I'm a very silly person. I love the part of me that is total infantile, and I always have a quib on my mouth, but I have to kind of tone it down to not, be seen as unprofessional, especially in a very powered environment. But my nature is I always see, the humor in everything. But that's so fundamental in a relationship to be able to tease the other one, and that really comes from a good place, not kind of like passive, aggressive kind of little quip. So there is a distinction too, right?
100%. I'm so glad you brought that up, because there's fun teasing and then there's like those right passive aggressive jabs. So yes, so we want the fun teasing. And then again, if you start to notice that you are teasing your partner, it's time for that conversation. Like, if you do notice those passive aggressive jabs, it's like, okay, something's really bothering me here. It's time to have a conversation about, hey, I felt really hurt about something you did or something that happened. So maybe it's like, okay, recognizing if I'm continually teasing about the same thing over and over, maybe there's something deeper here. Maybe I am hurt. But yeah, bringing back that lightness and fun is so important and so fundamental. And you're right. And we can have all these different sides. We can have the business side, the serious side, the, okay, this is my partner and we got to manage this. And then we can have that fun side of like, oh yeah, this is nice that we can laugh at each other and make jokes. And if you're not very comedic yourself, go to a comedy show. There's different ways to do it that you can
No,
do.
absolutely. And I think also with the love notes or something, there are so many wonderful little YouTube shorts nowadays that have a message that you can just send there, 40 seconds long, because it's the way we communicate and consume also sometimes some wisdom. So you can share that with your partner. And in terms of traditions, I thought that was beautiful. I once asked a friend of ours, actually, they are now married for about 50 years. And I said, so tell me, what's the secret? And you're still happy, and I can see you quibbing together. And she said, oh, what I love about my husband, every morning for the last 50 years, first thing he does, he gets downstairs and brings me a cup of coffee in bed. And that's the kind of traditions that he acknowledges. I do this for you. I get up before I make the coffee. The house smells full of coffee. And she sits in the bedroom and goes, ooh. My husband's coming back with a black cup of strong coffee to get me ready for the day. It sounds silly. It maybe is silly, but obviously, it worked for them. Let's talk about sex, baby.
I love that. Let's go there. Let's do it.
Okay, now, chapter four. We don't have sex anymore. How do we get to this?
So to me, what I've seen the most is, and what I've mentioned, these resentments that build over time. And so what happens is, if we are hurt or frustrated with our partner, we don't want to have sex with them. We're frustrated. We don't feel sexy. We're not turned on. So to me, that first piece is really tuning in. Am I hurt by something my partner did? Can we get past the emotional piece and talk about it so then we can get back to the physical? So that takes a lot of work, a lot of vulnerability, and really checking in. What am I upset about? It might have been something from 10 years ago. It might have been something small. I mean, I had a couple that came in and she was really upset because her son had an allergy. I think it was like a peanut allergy, and she felt like her husband wasn't taking it very seriously. And she had literally carried this for 10 years and he had no idea. And we were in session and he's like, oh my God, I didn't realize you were like still so mad about that. And she's like, yeah, you weren't taking it seriously, you know, when our son was 5 and, you know, and the son's 15 now, like, you know, and it was like, oh my gosh, she had been carrying that. He had no idea. We need to talk about it. And once that was resolved, and she said, I was really hurt then. And he acknowledged and he was remorseful, and then they could move past it. And then there, you know, there could be that physical that they could come back to. But so it's really tuning into to that resentment and frustrations with our partner. And then there's this idea that, of course, over time, our relationship is going to ebb and flow, and there's going to be times when we're more sexual and we're not. And that's okay too, based on our stress and things like that. And this idea that, yeah, it's not going to be as exciting as it once was. Okay, so we have to, the old cliche, how can we bring back some of that? And again, so those date nights are going to be key, because that's going to bring some of that newness. But it's also, again, prioritizing, like, okay, you know, it's easier for me to be in sweats, but you know what? I'm going to dress up a little bit. I want to impress my partner again. And on both ends, right? I want both partners to feel like, yeah, I want to look good for my partner and feel sexy. And so that's another piece of it. And then the other piece I talk about in Love Hacks is, if you haven't had sex for a while, which happens, and it feels really overwhelming to start that up again, there's a process called sensate focus therapy. That's a very, very good way to bring back some of that physicality without even having sex. It's really focusing on the sensations, the touch, the feel, the temperature, all of that, and connecting with our partner physically, where the goal is not to orgasm or to have sex. It's really to connect with our partner on the physical level. So it's a five-step process that I detail. And that's a great way for couples who may feel really overwhelmed with the idea of bringing sex back into the relationship, where it's a slow start. And I think that could be really helpful.
So what I'm hearing is that if you start getting disconnected on a, you know, psychological, mental, even emotional level, the disconnection, the physical disconnection is almost, you know, guaranteed.
Yes. You mean that there's an emotional issue? Is that what you're saying? Yes. And I love how you use the fast food communication rule there. You did what I'm hearing you say. No, I mean, 100%. And again, like, I think a lot of times couples don't even realize this. They don't realize. They just think, oh, I'm not. Like, I had a woman and she's like, I just think that my hormones are off. And she got them checked. Totally fine. And once we worked through a lot of those emotional issues, it was like, oh yeah, this is why I don't feel sexual, because I'm angry. And, you know, how can I feel sexual if I'm angry? And so once we worked through a lot of that, then she could let go and be physical again and feel attracted to her husband. Yeah.
How often have you actually seen the case that one partner really literally went off the other partner? It wasn't anger. It wasn't resentment. It was just, I just don't fancy you anymore. I would love to have sex. I would love to have a heavy libido, but just yes. Not you.
Yeah. And that's very possible. And so I think it's the question of, okay, have we tried everything to really make this work? Right? And I'm obviously in the business of trying to help couples stay together. But of course, there are times when it just can't work anymore. And so that's okay too. And it's really getting honest and really attempting. And so I always tell couples, like, I just want you to at least walk away knowing I have tried everything. I have tried therapy. We have worked together. We've worked through the really hard stuff. I'm not just exiting or putting my head in the sand. Like, we are really gonna look at this. And then we're gonna make a decision together. Like, okay, you know, and of course both people have to be in, and that's the tough part. A lot of times one is in and one is not. And so, yeah. So I think it's getting honest with that, but really trying first and foremost before you make that decision.
Yeah. And getting honest with it, I think, is so key, Kelly, because I think we all have our own love language. So what makes me feel loved might not make you feel loved, and vice versa. So I think finding out also on a physical level, what works for me, what turns me on, what gets me into the state of A, I'm feeling my libido, B, I really want to, you know, be physical and go to bed and spend the night. That is something I think is an interesting one, because, you know, also being a mother and having a 19-year-old daughter, of course, you kind of think, okay, how do you actually bridge the gap, what we can consume on the media as what relationships should be like, or a good sex life is supposed to be or not supposed to be? We have so many relationship sex gurus out there that say you should be that and he should be that.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with this? How do you really kind of consolidate, get those two kind of like, forget whatever you heard, just,
yes, sure,
you know, exactly. And just say what you like, what you don't. How do you do
yeah.
that?
Well, I think it's recognizing every couple is going to be individual in that respect. And what works for one couple may not work for another. That's why I always like, yeah, I don't want to be dogmatic about like, you've got to have sex 3 times a week or, cause I know couples who really have sex, you know, a few times a year and they're very happy and that's okay. It's what works for them. So I think it's really checking in with our partners of like, okay, is this working for us? And if not, okay, let's talk about how we can improve it. And so that's the first thing is like not really looking at all these gurus and saying, okay, we're not doing it right. It's like, no, just checking in as a couple. How do we both feel? And I think that's going to be key.
Yeah. And how to communicate. I think there may be the I messaging is much better. Don't do that. I don't think.
Exactly. Like, no.
I really love when you do that.
Yes, exactly. Yes, I love that you said that. It's so true of like focusing on the positive rather than the criticism. And the other thing I say to couples all the time too is like, you know, I have them take like a week off criticism break. Like, okay, this week when until I see you next, you're not to criticize each other. And they're kind of like, they're both like, oh, that's going to be really hard, you know, but
then we don't have to talk about anything.
Exactly. Well, and then they come back and it's really funny. And I'm like, how was the week? They're like, oh my God, it was really great. And then they like remember, oh yeah, we didn't criticize each other. And so if, you know, if that helps couples, I love that. And so if you do find something your partner does really annoying, just write it down. Like, you know, so you can process it and, you know, write it down. But chances are you may just forget about it a few hours later. But yeah, so I think you're right in that, especially, you know, bringing it back to the sex is like focusing on what does work for you. I love when you do this, or, you know, it would be great if you spend longer doing that. That I love, you know, that. So phrasing it in a very delicate way, but a fruitful way that the partner can understand, oh yeah, this works. And, yeah. You know, and everybody loves a little ego boost. If we can tell our partner what's working, that's great. Then they feel, you know, strong and, oh yeah, all right, cool.
Exactly, exactly. She's screaming because I did that to her.
Exactly. You know,
whatever.
It was all me, right? Exactly. Yeah.
No, I love that. And you know, the funny thing is it's so close to child psychology, because if you want to really change a child's or anybody's behavior, really, but let's talk about children, is that you emphasize always what they did well and kind of manage what they don't do so well, or you tell them what, you know, you could do, you can do better. Da 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 da. So rather than say, don't do that, or that's wrong, and be your
right. Exactly. No, you're right. I mean, sometimes our partners are like children. They're fragile and we have to talk in that same capacity. It works. But everybody wants to hear that in general, right? Everybody wants to hear things that make them feel good and not be criticized. So, right, it's like that rule of thumb. How would I want to hear this message? Would I want to be blamed? No, I'd want to hear it in a really kind way.
No, absolutely. And that takes me to the next issue. Mm-hmm. Infidelity.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now, once we're out of that sex business and like things happen, you know, it's kind of around the corner is infidelity. One calls the other or does it. Now, talk to us a little bit about what you've seen also in your practice when couples come, because maybe one was, there was infidelity or there was even a parallel relationship.
Right.
What have you seen?
Yeah, I mean, it is common and it's very easy to slip into that, especially with social media now. I think it's so easy to reconnect with our old flings or old partners and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think the one thing I want to speak of that I think is so important is that if infidelity happens, it doesn't necessarily mean that it has to be the end of the relationship. And I really want to stress that yes, of course, you're going to feel hurt and devastated and your relationship will change. But it doesn't necessarily have to be the end. We can take this as an opportunity of growth, because if there is infidelity, there is a rawness that you both will experience, right? You are starting from the ground of like, okay, now we're going to get honest and open, and maybe we can build something even stronger here. And we talk about what wasn't working in our relationship, and we talk about what we can improve, and we talk about why this happened, and we really go there. And then on the other side of that, with work on both ends, and again, I'm not saying it's simple, but it can really transform a relationship into a deeper, more authentic one if couples are committed to that.
What do you think is actually the main reason for infidelity in a actually strong relationship or even in a marriage?
I mean, there's so many variables. It's hard to just place one, a lot of times it really, it's funny enough, it doesn't have to do with the partner. It has to do with the person feeling insecure and want that validation and want, and, you know, and missing that feeling. And so it's kind of for their own ego a lot of times. And so a lot of times we think it's about us as the partner, like, I'm not attractive enough. And it's like, no, that person's just was insecure, you know, and things like that. So that's a big piece. There are times when, yeah, they're in a sexless relationship and they feel frustrated. And so, you know, there is that appeal of like, okay, justification. I haven't been getting it from my husband or wife. So, okay, you know, it makes sense for me to do this. It's not fair. You know, there's a little bit of that like entitlement and things like that. So it really depends. Oftentimes it just, you know, it's like, I don't know, things were going okay. And, you know, I don't know, I was just tempted, you know, so it really just depends. But I think the key is, okay, what can we learn from this? Because there's always something to be learned from it. And I don't want this to just be an incident where we don't talk about it. It's like, okay, well, let's really go there and examine it so we can improve and this doesn't happen again.
Yeah. And we look at it. I always wonder, you know, people are different in general. There are those, I mean, there's the saying, once a cheater, always a cheater. Mm-hmm. You know, once I was very, you know, black and white about it. And I believe now in hindsight, looking back, yeah, there's 50 shades of gray. And right. What you said is, I think, super important when you maybe are in a long-term relationship and you miss being prima donna or you know, you're mm-hmm. the alpha male. You don't feel seen and you don't feel appreciated as a, you know, right. lady or a gent or whatever. And you get that attention from somewhere else. Oh, my God. It's like flowering a plant that hasn't been, you know, watered for years.
So right. Exactly. It feels good. It's like, oh my God, I feel appreciated again. I forgot what this was like. And it's intoxicating, kind of those drugs we were talking about. Yeah.
And right. kids, I think, don't make it easier either, you know, because which is, you know, kids is a real paradox. Do you have children?
Yes. Got
okay.
two boys.
Okay. So you might empathize with what I'm going to say. For me, yeah. you know, kids is so, it's such a, just an oxymoron. They bind you forever and they divide you in so many ways.
Yes.
Right.
And I love your honesty about this because you are so right. It's so difficult. And I have a chapter in there, you know, things are different after kids because I want to speak on this too, honestly and openly, where it's hard. It's really hard and it's beautiful and kids are make the relationship enriching and wonderful, but it's also, it does, it changes the relationship. It changes the dynamic. It's no longer you two. It's now you two and another child or two children or three children. And of course it's going to be different. So by definition, your relationship will change and it is difficult. So I love your honesty around that because I think we need to speak on that.
No, absolutely. I mean, we are all human beings. And somehow, if you listen to also your friends or what's going on, it is always the same thing. And we have been children of two parents. And we've also seen dynamics. And you often, as a child, you think, oh, my God, it's me. You know, a lot of children, I think, often feel that they are the cause of their parents not getting on or being tired or whatever, which is a totally another issue. We might look at it. But I think what you also talk about in your book, which I think is so important, and that is distraction. We talked about priority, fair mm-hmm. enough, but let's look at the same issue from a social yeah. media point of view, because distraction, children, exhausting,
right.
and definitely always demanding. But social media is a drug intoxicating okay. us and hence intoxicating our relationship. How can we handle this?
Yeah, it's so difficult. I mean, because I even look at myself and like, you know, the ding goes off on my phone and it's like, oh, you know, the dopamine hit. So I first want to normalize that they train us. It's like Pavlov, like, you know, the ding goes off. Oh my God, you know, you feel important. You feel excited. There's an anticipation, right? So just want to normalize that. But yes, yeah, so when it becomes unmanageable, when you are realizing that social media is basically interfering with your relationship, that's when I want couples to check in and say, oh, okay. Or even right now, just examining like, oh, okay, yeah, like, am I prioritizing my partner or am I getting too involved with social media and texts and emails and Facebook and all of that? So yeah, there's a questionnaire I talk about in Love Hacks where it's just a really honest questionnaire that you can answer about, is social media affecting my relationship? Am I prioritizing it? Because we might not realize it. It might be unconscious because it's so normalized and everybody's on social media that it feels normal. But that might be a good first step for couples to do that questionnaire. You can also download it off my website as well, Kelly Miller Therapy and Kelly with an I. But yeah, so you can download it and just sort of check in and say, oh yeah, wow, okay. Ooh, I am comparing my relationship and that's affecting it. Or I am on the computer all the time. Or, you know, yeah, during dinner, I can't stop being on my phone. So it's really that honest check-in, I think, will be helpful.
And a date night, 2 hours without the phone, alone,
huge.
The pizzeria, possible.
I 100% advocate for the date nights. The phone is away. Put it away. That is not a time. It's time for you too. I mean, they've done studies where people have been on dates and even just having their phone out, they're not even on it. The couple, the partner doesn't feel attended to. It makes sense because at any point that thing can go off, right? And so it's deciding, hey, we're no phone zone right now. Or if that's too much for you, just, you know, during dinner, just saying, okay, half hour, we're all off devices. I mean, that's my rule too with my kids. It's like during dinner, nope. Everybody's off their device. This is a time to connect.
No, I love that. And you know, I've been born in the analog world, growing into the digital world, and I see how difficult it is to really put it down. You're always online and da 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 da. And you are so used to it that if you go out of the house without the phone, all of a sudden you feel lost. I always say,
take it.
You know, take my bag, take my purse,
yes.
Don't take my phone, you know, because then I'm gone.
Yes, you're lost. I mean, my phone died like a few weeks ago and I had to bring it to the Apple store and they said the repair was going to take 2 days. And I literally was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Like I, you know, it's like that feeling of like, you feel like you lost your soul. Absolutely.
It's perverse. It's perverse. Plus the digital dementia, they call it, you know, you don't even remember one single number anymore.
Oh, for sure. Yes. Well, because I grew up the same time where we memorized the numbers. I mean, I still remember some of my best friends from home.
Yes.
Now I can't even tell you my kid's number. I mean, that's terrible. It's terrible. Yeah.
I know. So I'm so with you there, Kelly. Now, being in love and falling out of love, I need to talk about that a little bit because, you know, when do you know the difference of, okay, I'm falling out of love, but I'm falling into loving.
Or right.
Love, right? And where do you draw the line that this is the end now? Or this
right.
is another different, more intimate phase in our relationship? How do we know?
Exactly. So I think the first thing to talk about is that we are going to fall in love and out of love with our partners and back in love. And that's totally normal. And one thing I talk about in Love Hacks is this continuum of a long-term relationship where if we can look at it, if you're a visual person with a graph, you're going to have these peaks and valleys where there's going to be ups and downs. You're going to feel really close with your partner. You're not going to feel so close. But if you look at the graph overall and it's either staying the same or even progressing, that's wonderful. And that's how we have to look at it. We don't want to focus on those downward jagged edges so much. We want to pull back and see, oh, okay, over the long term, you know, this works for me. And so I think we focus so much when we're in that discomfort or we're not connected with our partner and we want to make that decision to like exit so quickly because we're uncomfortable. So one thing I want to teach couples is like, okay, can we sit in the discomfort a little longer? Because there's growth and there's learning to be had there of like, okay, what's going on? Why do I not feel connected, right? I think we're just so quick to want to get out. I mean, we're in an instant society. We get things so quickly. We want to exit quickly. So I think it's really having a little patience with that that's going to be super helpful. And then again, I mean, I think it's, you ask a really great question. It's like, okay, well, when do we know? I think after a long time of really giving it that effort of checking in, of doing the work, of going to therapy, of, okay, is this a phase? And I'm not talking a quick, you know, few weeks. I mean, you know, can we give it a year where we, I mean, relationships, they take time, they take effort. So we have to put in that work. And so if after that time period or whatever time period you feel that you've really given it that time and you recognize, okay, yeah, just it's just not working for us anymore. And again, that's okay, right? It's not like we have to force to stay together if it's not right, but it's really going to be putting in that effort and checking in.
I remember once somebody said, you know, I said to my boyfriend, we're going to split up. And he said to me, well, don't worry. You know, we've made it 10 years. You know, we can make it to the end. And she's like, that would be another 30, 40, 50 years together. I don't
yes.
think so. He was very willing not to sacrifice and throw away 10 years of a relationship.
Right.
substantial. But yep. then you look ahead and you go like, no, the next 40 years are supposed to be like the first 10 years.
Right.
Maybe look at it.
You're so right. Isn't that like the sunken cost theory? You're like a numbers person.
It's
like,
yeah, I do.
yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, well, we've gone this far. Like, come on, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, and both viewpoints are very valuable because it's like, okay, but we put in all this time and effort and there's something here. And then there's that other piece that's like, okay, but you know, maybe it hasn't been the best 10 years for me and maybe I want a different chapter of my life, you know? And so that kind of thing. So both viewpoints are very valid.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe we've been trying for the last 2 years to really make this work, but it's starting to just be obvious that whatever we put in, we just don't get that. And we are just not, whether you can call it soulmates or whatever, but we don't manage to stay in the same bubble. So there's always one of us, you know, escaping.
Exactly.
We're starting to go towards the end of our conversation, Kelly. Unfortunately, I could talk to you for
hours, days,
absolutely. Money and culture, before looking at what the key pillars of a good relationships are, talk to me a little bit about the vision about money and relationships and how much of a match there needs to be, really, to have a common vision and the same thing, cultural backgrounds, even religious backgrounds, family backgrounds, and what that really determines or may determine in a relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. So money is one of the big things we talk about. And again, it's cultural because it's taboo and people aren't they're not taught to talk about money. And so, yeah, so I think there are these big differences that exist, religion, money, all of those things. But that doesn't necessarily mean if you are different viewpoints from your partner, it doesn't mean it can't work. I just think that we have to come together on what does align, right? So a lot of times if I have a couple, for example, that's a spender or a saver, okay, well, let's talk about our short-term goals together. And a lot of times it's like, oh, I didn't realize I actually have the same short-term goals. Or let's talk about our long-term goals. Oh yeah, we actually do have the same long-term goals. It might look different today, but over time. And so it's really coming together on what does align and what does work and where do you match up? And I think that's going to be huge in like, oh yeah, we're not as different as we thought. And there are ways for us to come together on this.
And do you think the pretty woman story actually works, where you have that ultra rich guy picking up an ultra, poor girl, and it actually works, him bringing him, you know, her up into society, and they have the same vision? Or is that really just fairy tale? Or is that kind of class system in a certain way, not as in money class, but how cultured one is, what one has been exposed to, how one sees and interprets the world?
Yeah. You know, I think what's dangerous around that is she relying on him to save her? That's where it gets. And I think a lot of times we look to our partner to save us. And that's where the danger comes in, is like, as long as we recognize our partner can't save us, we've got to save ourselves. So we have to recognize, okay, you know, and how I like to look at relationships is like the letter H. Can we both be individuals and there's a bridge across, rather than the letter A, where we're depending on each other so much and there's that codependency? So to me, when you say that, that's just what I think of, is like, as long as one partner isn't looking for the other to rescue them.
I love that. H-A.
Yes.
Ha! 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 That's my ha moment.
I love it. I love it.
Now, this is really good. Two independent pillars that have the choice to connect. But if they don't, they're still there and they're still strong. Whereas...
Right. Yes, exactly. You're leaning on one another and it can kind of crash over. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the same for culture. Right. So looking at your book, if you had to really kind of drill down and say, these are the three key pillars, whatever it is, when you are in a relationship, keep these three things in mind, these three hacks in mind, and you'll be already up to a good start or continuation of a relationship. What would you say?
Oh my God, it's so funny. It's so hard. It's like saying, like, who's your favorite child? I'm like, oh, how do I come up with three? The three for me would be, number one is what we've talked about so much, is that communication. It is essential in a relationship. And so it's going to be having those hard conversations and working through. The only way out is through. We've got to have those conversations in order to connect. Number two would be honesty, of really getting honest with ourselves first and foremost, and then with our partners. Because to me, there's nothing, you can't have a real authentic and genuine connection with somebody if there isn't that honesty. And then I think the third one, I love that you said it, that empathy. Can we have more empathy for our partners and recognize, hey, we may not see eye to eye on everything. We might see things differently, but I'm going to assume positive intentions. I'm going to reframe and I'm going to have empathy for my partner and compassion, because that is going to make all the difference.
Then let's finish off with something, the three red flags. You know,
sure.
there's the Gottmans that talk about the horsemen, but
yes.
It comes to what danger zones do you mm-hmm. see in communication or in a partner where
yes.
you say, watch out for this, whatever
yes.
heck I have in this
sure.
box might not work when this comes along.
Right, exactly. Okay, so I think the main thing is if you ever feel disrespected, like, you know, and that, you know, obviously any physical abuse or anything like that. But yeah, if there's a huge disrespect, it's just the relationship just can't work. You have to respect and admire your partner. So we have to look at that. I think there's also, if there's not the trust, we talked about the honesty. So if your partner is continually lying to you, right? And I'm talking about, you know, almost not even when you're married, when you're just dating, if you're starting to see that, I mean, that's, you know, we have to be totally honest with our partners. So that would be my second one. And then the third red flag would be for me, if the partner isn't willing to have any accountability. That's, you know, we want to have that accountability because we're all going to make mistakes in this relationship and we need to own that. And so am I willing to have that accountability? Is my partner willing to be accountable for the mistakes that he or she made? I think those are going to be the big ones just to kind of look out for.
No, absolutely. From my side, I totally am with these three, and I would even add generosity. And I don't mean monetary generosity. I mean just the generosity to donare, as they say in Italian, that to give. Mm-hmm. And generosity is, I hear you. I'm spending time with you. When I listen to you, I actually look into your eyes and I follow you wherever you take me. And I think that is very much a trait one is actually born with. And generosity in a certain way is also, you know, when you are actually thankful, you have that being grateful is a form
right.
of generosity, because you account for, hey, you know, oh, there is generosity mm-hmm. around, and you offer that as well. So I think that's
important.
And that reflects on many, many levels.
For sure. I love that. It's like the generosity consideration with our partners. Yeah. All that is key. Yes.
Kelly Miller Therapy.com. That's where people can find you, right? And work with you.
Yes. Yes. And it's Kelly with an I, I spelled it a little different.
Absolutely. Kelly Miller, Love Hacks. I loved your book. It is a manual. It is a very quick read, exactly what we need. And super, super, super insightful, helpful. And thank you so much for your time, Kelly.
Thank you so much. I loved it.